Welcome to the 8th episode of the 3rd season of Your Mom's Podcast, the only podcast that's worth walking out on a date with one of Degrassi's coolest girls. I'm Caroline.
And I'm Avis.
And today we're talking about Degrassi season 3, episode 10, Never Gonna Give You Up. Roses are red. You should have known Rick was shady the first time you heard him call Terry, m'lady. Terry finally has a boyfriend, and to hear her tell it, things are going great. Rick is sweet, sensitive, and seems to always have roses in hand. But something more sinister is happening beneath the surface, and Jimmy and Hazel are growing suspicious. Also in this episode, JT and Spinner act like children.
I think this is an instance of not a totally inconsequential B-plot, but just a B-plot that, like, felt way shorter than B-plots normally feel because it was so basic.
It's
but they
fine.
Really do act like children, though. Yeah, I mean, it is fine. I think it's a continuation of their dynamic of, like, fighting over, not even fighting, because now JT has earned his place in Paige's life, and Spinner has as well. So it's like they're kind of being like having a dick measuring contest essentially about like each other's presence in Paige's life. So now we just get that continuation of that relationship. But I mean, it's like some of these B plots are just things I didn't ask for.
It's frustrating that, like, Spinner gets it. You know, because he says to Craig, like, she went through some stuff last year and JT was there for her. And so she feels like she owes him. But he doesn't get it. Like, she doesn't feel like she owes him. They've bonded. Yeah. And you know what stuff she went through last year. Like,
right.
You need to let her have this relationship. Like, it's not a romantic thing. It is a friendship thing. He was really there for her through some substantial trauma. And you know what that trauma was. So, like, grow the fuck up, Spinner.
Yeah, I think it's hard to, like, hard to hear him simplify it like that, to be like, oh, she just went through some stuff. And, like, I think I did two watches, which I typically do, but I don't typically do one watch where I just watch it and then the second watch where I take notes. I typically take notes both times and then just add in notes on the second watch that I didn't notice on the first. But this first watch, I was just like, that line kind of read differently on the first watch. Like, I wasn't, like, I didn't see him coming from such a negative place. Whereas when I think about it in the, like, when I watched it the second time, I was like, okay, but that's really, like, oversimplifying the things that you know that she went
through. Yeah, but I also, I don't have a problem with that. I think that that's, he's handling it in a respectful way, really, because, like, Craig doesn't need to know what happened.
Well, so that's not my issue with it. My issue with it is he frames it in a way that makes it like the gravity of the situation is just non-existent. Like, he's not saying it like, oh, you know, like in any way that wouldn't support Craig being like, okay, well, he's a pest. He needs to get the fuck, like, you know, like, he's not framing it in a way that is making it seem like, okay, he was actually there for her in a time that she needed him, and he's still being there. Like, I understand why he didn't air her, and I appreciate that he didn't, but I think that the way that he says it makes it only only one reaction. If I heard someone say mm-hmm. that, I'd be like, okay, well then that sounds like the time is, you know, like maybe like what? They don't need to be as close as they are. Like it just sounds no, it's like
definitely like he doesn't framed. He doesn't get it.
No.
And I think too, like
he's not supposed
Paige
to
and it, JT have a very different relationship, you know, than he and JT mm-hmm. do. Mm-hmm. JT's not going out of his way to fucking antagonize Paige.
Right.
And so I can get why, like, he doesn't understand that it could be more than obligatory. Mm-hmm. Because every interaction with him, with JT that Spinner has, is him being an obnoxious little shithead.
Yeah. I think like, that that's fair.
How are we in high school playing the copycat game, child?
I am so fucking happy that, like, the children that I've chosen to be around in various years of my life have not taken to playing that fucking, oh my gosh. I am with Spinner on the fact that that game, I will just stop talking to you. I will right. just like now as an adult, it still pisses me off, but I will just walk away. As a kid, I got pissed off in your face and I'm like, you need to like... like kind of it's what Spinner does. It did thankfully like die sometime in high school. Died a very beautiful death. But yeah, no, he's one of those people, JT, that knows how to get under your skin. He knows
right
like what's gonna really tick you the like in a very specific way. And I would argue that Spinner's like one of those people who doesn't take much. Like he's kind of stereotypical in the way that he's gonna get too annoyed and he's gonna try to like beat you up. He still has that, like, I think that they bringing back that little bit of his bully persona for this episode was fun a little mm-hmm. because I think that they dropped it for a while.
B plot,
yeah,
it had no substance. I like it when the B plots have a little substance.
I prefer it when they have a little substance. And we're trying, and like, I was trying to read too much in, like, into it. But like, when I look at my notes for this episode, the B plot notes, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 bullet points versus like a page and a half for the A plot. Yeah. It's just not.
It's weird to me that neither Radich or Quan, like, immediately knows that those notes didn't come from JT and Spinner.
The fact that they both, like, do the same thing and, like, approach them with some kind of, like, snappy, some sort of snappy entrance is hilarious. Like, but I also want to commend them on the poems themselves. The, you know, mm-hmm. they've got the roses or red one in there, but then the one that JT sends is actually like way better.
Way better.
Like, I did you write it down?
No, it's like your window.
You just remember it? Yeah. Yeah, I did write it down. It is, oh, Miss Quan, your hair kissed by the wind, your lips kissed by me.
Yes.
Like, that is actually really, really, like, that's really beautifully put. Mm. it reminds me of that poem, or, like, I think this is a poem, yeah, like, oh, to be a glove on the hand of whomever, yeah, it kind of reminds me of, like, those vibes. But, yeah, this too, I will say, we'll get into it in the fashion corner, but like really the highlight of this B plot to me is Paige serving looks at every turn. God, in this seriously. Fucking B plot. That's the highlight of it for me, because I'm not really paying attention to JT or Spinner. And I mean, okay, so the restaurant scene is hilarious. I think that that's probably the best part of the B plot.
You haven't worked a lot of food service, have you?
Oh, no, no. I don't mean hilarious in the way that, like, I think that what JT did to Spinner was hilarious. I think that it's hilarious that a scene like this was put into this episode for these two characters, because it's another one of those, this could be in multiple other mm-hmm. teen shows plotline. And this could, I mean, to be fair, this could have been the whole plot. They actually expanded it And they could have just had Spinner saying, oh, I'm having trouble work, like he did in the beginning, and then have that sort of thing. Like, it didn't need to be so much back and forth. At least they fleshed it out a little bit and made it a prank war. But no, mm-hmm. I think it's like, that to me is when it's like, my note here was when Spinner turns around to see JT sitting there, it was in that moment that he knew he fucked up. It wasn't cool, but like, it also is like a below the belt thing. It's a below the belt thing. And I think even the iteration of like somebody coming into a store that you work at or whatever and fucking with you, and you can't respond the way that you want to because you're at work, you're in your place of business. And it's just like that trope or situation has happened in so many sitcoms, and
yeah,
I don't mind it, but there are other more important things going on. And like, JT's such a douchebag in this scene. Like, he's such a fucking cunt. Like, he really sucks for that. Like, that's a below the belt sort of thing. Like, you can like do whatever. Like, does he have a car yet? I don't know, he doesn't have a car yet. No. That happens next season. But like, find his scooter or something, his skateboard, and hide it from him or something. Okay, well, like, do something pranky.
Skateboard, because it's not Spinner's,
it's the communal school brotherhood of the traveling skateboard. No,
Claire's got it this week.
There's got to be something else that he could have done. Oh, but like, the fact that he's like, nope, I'm gonna go to your job and I'm gonna fuck with you at your job. And it is a wonder that after this, canonically, Spinner still rises in the ranks. He outlasts that manager who's like cross with him. He outlasts that
Spinner
dude.
Spinner
is the fucking dot. Yes, the dot,
and he's only an assistant manager,
right? Oh my gosh, that's his career. The dot is not over, ladies and gents. Ladies and gents, and
why am I
everything
now?
And everyone else.
Here's what started playing in my head thinking about Spinner doing his time at the dot. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, Les Miserables.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the at the end of the work song, when Jean Valjean's like, you know, I know the meaning of the law.
Mm-hmm.
19 years a slave to the law or whatever, and then Javert's like, 5 years for what you did, the rest because you tried to run. And I'm like, that Spinner. He's just like stuck in the dot.
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, that is such a good show. I used to, brief tangent, but like, my musical theater teacher was so very purist in high school that she, if there was not like an acceptable production available for said show, she would just show us these staged like choral you know what they're called, something, but those,
yeah,
like,
I don't know
they
what
do
called,
right they do
the, everybody's yes. like in costume
it's, they've got their lines at there at the right, they've got their book and they're standing at mics and they're killing it, and you know, they're still in character and everything, but they're not doing the actual movements or any blocking of the musical or, you know, of the play. So I actually really enjoy those versions because I love just listening to musical songs, and, you know, a good musical, you're still getting the story anyway. So, like, life changing those things were. And I can just picture that scene because the two, the Jean Valjean and Javert, like, they were, you know, they have them next to each other if they have a lot of songs together. And the interactions they had. And it's supposed to be done where like one is like lower than the other, and they still somehow manage to like capture that back and forth without the like level difference of like a superior and a underling or whatever. So yeah,
I love to have a shower concert.
Mm-hmm.
And one of mine is to transition from the work song into that exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And one time I thought that I was home alone. And Forrest came home while I was in the shower. And I'm like at the now bring me prisoner 24601. And I'm doing the back and forth. And whenever I'm in the shower, I like, you know, move from this side to this side, depending on who I am. And I change my voice a little. And like, you know, it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
And Forrest came in like, what the fuck is happening? Like, do I need to call the cops? Are you okay?
Yeah.
Because I was like so into it and just absolutely. Like.
And that's like, that's the zest of musical theater. I mean, I actually, I need to get my inner, not even my inner, my musical teenager that Avis is upset with me for not having all of these soundtracks that I love on my phone, in my musical library. But this morning I was randomly shuffling as I do my library and Won't Say I'm in Love. I Won't Say I'm in Love came on from Hercules. And I also was listening to, and it shuffled onto Part of Your World as well, which is less of my, like less of a banger, but like, you know, still but a ballad. It's a good one to, sing, good one to sing. Oh, yes. And it was
Betcha
beautiful.
On Land, they understand. Bet they don't reprimand their daughters. My soprano is so gone. I've been doing like male villain songs a lot.
I was gonna say, I love a male song. That's those are the songs I choose for karaoke 9 times out of 10 because I actually really slay those songs. And when I was on vacation, this guy sang "Before He Cheats" by Carrie Underwood, and I was just like, I love when I've never heard a guy sing that song, and it's great.
That's beautiful. My two favorite villain songs right now are My Name from Oliver,
mm-hmm.
and then Hellfire from Hunchback of Notre Dame, which has always been a favorite.
I haven't seen Hunchback of Notre Dame in years.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. It's ridiculous to me that they made everything a goddamn Broadway musical. Except for that one, which was written for the stage, and we know Victor Hugo translates well to Broadway. We have mm-hmm. seen Les Misérables.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think.
Sorry, I don't know.
I actually really love the Notre Dame, Hunchback of Notre Dame movies. Obviously, the Disney movies are the ones I'm talking about because mm-hmm. I don't think that they have other. I don't think that
there's an old black and white one.
Oh, I should maybe.
It's
should
way
look
more
that
accurate.
Up. Of course it is. but I wore my VHS out of The Hunchback of Notre Dame because of Esmeralda, obviously. Like, I'm not going to unabashedly, she's beautiful. And I will say that is one of the, if I had not been in that time period to experience that coming out and everything, I don't know if people would watch, like, I don't think a kid is going to watch Hunchback of Notre Dame today. It depends on the kid, but it's such a like a deep cut of Disney, of that age of Disney that like people always overlook it for like every other movie. People talk about the 101 Dalmatians before they talk about Hunchback of Notre Dame, which I actually know. I mean, if you are a person who likes 101 Dalmatians just for the plot, that's fine. But like, all I really took out of that film was Cruella De Vil. So I mean, that's all that was important to me.
Awesome villain. Yeah. No, the Hunchback villainy. Is so underrated.
It is.
You know what's crazy is we've done this thing we do sometimes where we lose the plot.
Oh well, we are only a short skip into this.
I think to this show,
but yeah, I was gonna say, do you want to just skip on out of here to the A plot because that's mm-hmm. way more deserving of lengthy discussion?
Yeah, I think this is a really solid, really heavy episode. I think obviously it's like it's a bit rushed because mm-hmm. your abusive boyfriend doesn't just like abuse you several times in a week all of a sudden, like.
I needed a two-parter out of this. So
it deserved a
bad. Two-parter. That was one of my notes. It deserved a two-parter because I think that they did a similar thing in the 80s series, but they did it in a way that I think makes a little bit more sense, where they have it happen, but then they also bring it back up episodes later. So it's kind of like a two-parter where you get oh, okay, she did try to break up with this guy and it's not being successful, kind of like what happens in this episode where, you know, like Rick won't allow that. And then there is, you know, resolution that she's going to try to break up with him. But she is, in the 80s series, is assaulted into getting back together with him. Like, he won't accept that she's broken up with him. And it's been several weeks. There, it's like the cool off period has happened, which I think we kind of needed here. Like, I know that there, obviously the story continues. It leads up to a really big thing in and of itself, but like the lead up to it is laid in this foundation already. Like, we're getting the building blocks of what eventually happens next season. But the fact that like this is not a two-parter, I think, is a disservice to what they tried to do. I think they tried to do a really accurate portrayal of a guy who seems very charismatic. And even though, like, Rick, I don't think he's very successful with his attempts at being charismatic, but, like, he's calm and collected and he's not raising his voice or doing, even though he still creeps people out and gives people off vibes, there's not the same level of, like, negative personality traits that Terry gets to experience. And I think they do a good job with that. And I wish that we got, like, maybe one episode of that. And then at the end, you know, we get a shift of, like, we just needed a little bit more before the actual violence started.
Right.
Because there's just way, there's typically so much lead up to that. Like, you know, you'll hear, thankfully, I don't have a personal experience in this matter. But I have had loved ones say, okay, it could have been a year. Several years, and then something shifted and that started happening, like you know, a birth of a child or they moved or something, loss of a job, right? Something happened. And then, not to say that it's always trigger based, but like it can be, and it doesn't have to be just be, okay, this person is violent and they're gonna slap me around, not to be, you know, brash about it, but like the fact that it's so cartoonish, I think that they do a good job with, like, okay, we're only doing one episode of this. We know we're only doing one episode and we only have this amount of time to tell it. So we've got to really just focus on what is important about the story. And they decide that the violence is more important than a lot of the lead up to the abuse, which I argue is okay. Like, okay, that was a choice you made. But I do think it might have been a little bit more impactful to balance a lot of the...
Well, and I think that's one of the disservices, like, with the strict, like, A plot, B plot style.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, most teen shows, at any given point in a season, there's, like, four or five stories going on.
Yeah.
And there's going to be the one or two that are the focus of the episode, but you're going to get little bits and pieces of these other things.
Right.
And they're going to come back to the forefront. And like, I like the A plot, B plot format. I think it works for Degrassi, but it does make it so that everything has to be, you know, it's like the whole Ellie cutting episode.
It needs, like, the fact that, I think where they kind of go wrong is they feel like, okay, well, we have started another plot line, so we need to give it due time to develop, etc. But I actually would argue that the fact that you guys chose such a really simple, you know, plot to go with for this B plot, you could really just shorten it to maybe two scenes. And then use the rest of that time, like you said, for what we really care about. And it's not like we don't need, but like it really could have just been like, well, several, like, maybe 3 to 5 minutes of the episode versus like 5 to 10.
Right. And it's not like they don't show it, you know, like I think the scene at the dot is very telling. And I love that Jimmy's the one who picks up on that.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
And I also just have to say, fuck you and your garden salad, Rick. Because have you ever been to any restaurant where a garden salad is not a side salad?
No. Typically, like, Caesar salads are typically full salads, but the inside right. salads, but like, no.
We're talking yeah. not even a full
like salad. Like, a chef salad is a full salad because they've right. got, like, things but on a
chef
there.
Salad is just, like, meat and cheese. Love it.
I love meat and cheese, yeah, and, like,
and like an iceberg egg, lettuce and egg.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's true. It's like one of like, those hoagie in a bowl.
My dad used to take me to this place by the airport when he would pick me up when I was a kid in Indiana. Mm. I want to say it was called Al's. And their salads came in these like big, like that like textured glass
mm-hmm.
bowl. And it was just like, it was just meat and cheese, like realistically. And we'd go and we'd get salads at Al's and it was great.
Balance. Life is about
but
balance.
But not a garden
you
salad.
Know?
You know, if he had been like, you know, okay, because here's the thing is, and I don't think that it's appropriate here. They haven't been dating that long. She hasn't been asking him to control her food or right. anything like that. Like, I think it's perfectly reasonable if like I had recently said to Fel, like, I really want to be cutting out starches or whatever. And then right. we go out to dinner and I get a burger and he's like, do you want to maybe do a salad instead of the fries?
Mm-hmm.
I don't that's think a, that's unreasonable.
But no, that's a conversation that you guys are typically, and I mean, I will also say that him saying it in front of her when they are going to order versus talking to her about it aside right. and not in like not making it such a discussion for the table, because like he could have like said, hey, so what do you think about ordering? It could have been something that was private between them, but making it something like he's making the choice for her without making the choice for like he's kind of bullying her into it by making it such an out loud public thing, because she is going to feel shamed kind of into honoring her craving for a salad. And I'm saying craving with like air quotes here, because like I As don't Marco know if says, she actually said that. Did she actually fucking say that?
As Marco says, does anyone really crave a salad?
Right.
And I
like,
don't think that's fully accurate, because like at this point, like salads are so many things. There are yeah. some bomb ass salads that I will crave. But I feel like in the 2000s, like,
I was gonna say
salad
was
a Caesar salad or a garden salad.
Yeah, like they were very one-dimensional, and to eat a salad was to be eating like eating a very boring meal. If it like they used to call that sort of thing like rabid food. Mm-hmm. And the discourse around salad, like I remember there was the meme like a woman laughing over her salad. Like it was just such a thing when stock photos became
no,
such
I know.
A pop.
We're gonna
yeah,
take,
that meme.
We're going to take pictures of us eating
yes.
pasta or laughing over
yes
pasta.
Laughing eating pasta.
Well,
but like
I also would just like to, as like a PSA, the more you know,
mm-hmm.
Don't fuck with fat free and light dressing. Like
yeah.
enjoy a full fat dressing, because here's the thing, mm-hmm. not only is it more delicious, but the vast majority of the vitamins and that like you're gonna get from a salad mm-hmm. are fat soluble.
Ooh, so it helps to eat with something
so
fatty
to
absorb.
Eat with something fatty.
The more you know. And guys,
and like, if
I...
you're not going to use a full fat salad, throw an avocado on there. Like,
yeah. I've seen so many...
and it's good for you.
Like health influencers or whatever they call themselves every other 2 days. Because that's my algorithm. I get a lot of fitness and lifestyle mm-hmm. shit. Even this guy who I like, I'm really bad at remembering usernames. He will review other people's videos, do that like reaction and be like, oh, that's a great idea. And he's like, oh, and you could, there's fat-free dressings for like anything like 30 calories or whatever. And I'm like, but why? I'm a firm believer in like everything in moderation. I am not going to like, I don't drink diet soda. I don't, and I mean, not because I'm like on my high horse or anything, but just because I prefer the taste of real Coke. I'm not, Diet Coke does not taste the same. I've tried.
I drink Diet Coke because I don't like the taste of regular Coke.
Well, there you go. See, it's for me, it's all about taste. Anything that's like, and I'm not going to have like, 2-3 Cokes a day. But if I want a Coke, I'll have a Coke. And I'm not going to feel bad about indulging in a Coke. But when you, I feel like I always see people kind of being shameful about like drinking or eating things that are like a donut or like pizza, like things like that. But it's like, if you are moderating or aware of how much you're eating that thing, or like, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think when it becomes harmful is being really restrictive, when you're just like, oh, I can only eat a salad. I can only, because I didn't earn anything else. And it's like, that mindset is really harmful. Like, Terry don't need that shit. She's already dealing with a lot of fat phobia of her own.
There's certainly merit to calories in, calories out, but I think where the calories come from is way more of a factor. You know what I mean? Like, and yes, a fat-free dressing only has 30 calories, but you're not going to absorb the nutrients that you're trying to get into your body as well. And fat-free dressing has more sugar or sweetener in it.
Yeah.
Because you got to make up for the loss of the fat somewhere.
There's so much sneaky sugar. So, like, when you go to Europe, the bread tastes so different from our bread because of all of the sugar we dump in our bread. Like, I ate bread every day there, and I walked all over, and I lost weight. I did not gain weight. My host mother always packed me Nutella and bread, or, like, brioche, whatever the hell I wanted as a spread, every morning in my little pail, and I never gained weight while I was in Germany. Because their bread is just not sugarlicious.
Right. It's also quality of ingredients, I feel like. Like, people want to shit on regulations because people are idiots.
Please regulate some eggs. Yeah.
That I had in Amsterdam were better.
The
bread was better. The hotel breakfast pastries, which you know aren't like... Like, those are probably frozen and baked here in the morning up, right?
Right, they're not, right.
We're better than, like, some places where I've had fresh pastry in America.
It's just thing, and, like, I still dream about, there's this delicacy in Germany called spaghetti ice, where it's literally just, like, every ice cream shop, I really didn't see... Except for in the stores, I didn't see like packaged ice cream. You know how we always have, if there's an ice cream shop, it's just they have big canisters of like industrial sized ice cream they're selling. It's 9 times out of 10, they're not selling their own freshly made ice cream. There was an ice cream parlor in every turn of the square in the little village that I was staying in. And literally, they all made their own ice cream, and they all made this thing called spaghetti ice, where they would take their vanilla ice cream and they would feed it through like a meat grinder, so that it would get so it would shred the ice cream into like noodle shape, and then they would put like raspberry or strawberry sauce on top, and then grate vanilla chocolate flakes for like the parmesan. It was delicious. I still dream about it. Like, it was the most delicious like ice cream I've ever had. And I'm not even a big like ice cream person, but I would go and like, if I had money to spend outside of what, like if my host mother fed me dinner, I would go eat a second dinner of ice cream because it was fucking good. It was so good. And they had more flavors than that. They're like, their menu was like a little book that you could flip through with all the pictures.
Born in Europe.
I know. I actually think, you know, obviously the being an African American is an experience, but I'm sure it would have been like, I'm sure I'd have a similar experience growing up in various parts of Europe. It's just a lot different.
But at least you'd have like healthcare and good food.
No disputing here. I don't think I've had a bad experience. Even when I did travel abroad, I felt very safe, and it was in Germany as well. So I mean, there's all that negative connotation about like Germany. But
I don't know. I feel like what I've heard is like Germany fucked up real bad once, and ever since is like, nope, shut that shit down. We don't do that here.
That's what I always tell people. And I think people just, I don't know why. Maybe it's because like the language itself sounds kind of harsh. I actually truly love that about it. Maybe that's just me. Because like even something like I love you, ich liebe dich, can sound kind of like hostile if you do.
For real.
It's like low-key my kind of language, where it's just French that just thinks it's way better than it is.
And not at all to say that there's no racism in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've never been.
There's no, I mean.
But.
I just think there was, like, outside of the city centers, they were surprised that there were Black people. Because typically Black people choose to live in the city centers.
Right.
Versus the little suburbs along the train line. But other than that, no, I experienced no, and everyone was actually always delighted when I tried to speak German. All the Germans love me. No one tried to touch my hair. And that was pre don't touch my hair. So I had a great time. And my German came first, and she had no problem, you know, living in a house full of Black people. She didn't, she was fine.
It wasn't like the color of friendship.
It was, no, we don't talk anymore. We're Facebook friends. We're cordial, but I don't think we ever really clicked. We were never friends, but we were always nice to each other, and she ate everything my mom made her, and she,
okay, so apparently very nice. Germany is a good place to be.
I mean,
angry.
The language just sounds angry. I can only vouch for the Niedersachsen area. That's where I stayed. It's Niedersachsen. However, bars in
Niedersachsen. Okay, fuck you.
I think also throw Barsinghausen in there, because that's another. places sound fake. But yes, we got on this tangent because of a salad. Fuck you, Rick. She can order whatever Rick. She wants. But yeah.
I have to call out one, I have to call out Marco's fucking scene.
And why did he write that?
I have to call out in particular, I have to call out when Hazel's like, what we want isn't always what we get. And then Terry, as though she's saying something so profound, is like, and what we get isn't always what we want, is it? And like, it's so bad. That's not deep.
Like, literally in the history of original student like works, this is low tier. Fucking tier Marco Del Rossi. And he's
where,
like,
is Ashley?
Oh, well,
why hasn't Ashley written a scene?
Where's Ashley in her, right? She's in this class. Where the fuck is Ashley at? No, literally, where is Ashley? The fact that Jimmy's like, no, Marco's like, I don't feel like directing. So yeah, I'm not going to direct. I'm going to be the starra. And then Jimmy's like, and I don't feel like acting. So director it is. And
Rick had to know that Terry looked way dumber following his advice, right? Like, there's no way.
I Googled this earlier because I wanted to make sure. I've done theater, as we both done theater. Have you ever heard of the three-quarter rule? Have you ever been instructed to do that?
I mean, you're instructed to turn out.
Right.
You stand
yes.
at an angle. But
at an
not...
angle. Like, because we know those terms, downstage and upstage. So apparently there is a three-quarter rule for an actor who is addressing an actor who's upstage.
Mm-hmm. No, and I've definitely heard three-quarter, but I've never heard it as the three-quarter rule, and I've never heard it as the way that Rick described it.
Me either.
I know that you are instructed to turn out, and that, yeah, based on where you are and where who you're addressing is, you turn out.
Yeah, you want to be turning way. To, like, catty-cornering yourself to be, I used to be able to, like, see out into the audience, essentially. Mm-hmm. If you're looking into the wings, you have not turned far enough. You have
and
not turned far
breathing.
Enough.
Breathing.
And then the
yes. Mama is here.
Like, literally the fact that he says, my mom walked the boards at Stratford.
The way he calls Jimmy Jim.
Jim.
I hate him. He's so gross. He's so cringy. He's so.
It's so bad.
Like I said in the poem. No.
It's so bad.
It's anybody so bad. Anybody who uses M'lady unironically is not somebody you want to know.
And I think even that that's a fair rule. Even anybody who uses
it ironically with any regularity.
Oh my gosh. Oh
like,
my
if gosh. You're not making fun of an incel when you say M'lady.
I just have such a problem with his personality, especially towards Jimmy. I am initially watching the episode, I think I always kind of trying to think more critically into these episodes, but I always thought that he was just trying to suck up to Jimmy, but now thinking a little bit more critically about it, I'm like, I think he just wants to understand what Jimmy's intentions are, and he either wants to get to be friends with Jimmy so that he can control his movements toward Terry, or he just wants to find out what his intentions are so that he can better control the situation overall. I think he isn't sure about Jimmy. He thinks that Jimmy's a threat to him, but he thinks every guy's a threat to him.
Well, exactly. But he thinks Hazel and Paige are a threat to him. Here's the thing. Figuring out intention. One of the most important components of abuse is isolation.
Oh, true. Oh, well, yeah. I just mean that, like, his personality towards, like, even towards when Jimmy says, can I talk to you? And they have that conversation. And or he says, can I have a minute? And he says, for you, you can have five. Like that kind of like, what, like, oh, okay, we're friends already. Where he's trying to establish that rapport. I think it's more to just like, because he doesn't do that with anybody else. He doesn't do that with Marco. It's because
Jimmy's on to him right out the gate.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Because when
because I'm like that, his behavior doesn't make sense. You want everyone to believe your
when
act.
You're that type of person, you're hyper aware of who's not buying it.
That's fair. He is too. Like even when like, I mean, that's a lot of why he probably doesn't want, and it's Paige and Hazel, but Hazel's primarily been the one who we've seen walking with, like when Terry found the rose and everything, like Terry and Hazel hang out together, it seems like, in universe, way more than Terry and Paige hang out by themselves. It's not Terry and Paige hanging out by themselves, it's Terry and Hazel. So I think he knows that Hazel is observant as well and has her ear and doesn't want her to get in a situation where Hazel can kind of bring up things that she's noticed. Because right. I think, like you said, like you have to be that sort of hyper aware, your vigilance, because you're constantly putting on a charade. It's important to know where these people stand and who you need to kind of interfere with to get things back in status quo and on track for you.
Yeah, no, and I would say that's like a point to Degrassi is like, yes, the like getting from point A to point physical abuse was done very fast because that's the style of Degrassi.
Right.
But I will say Rick's behavior as an abuser and his behavior with like everybody we see him interact with was, I think, very on brand. It was, you know, it's ham-handed because it's Degrassi, but
honestly,
they only have 22 minutes. Like,
I looked up some red flags of abuse. I searched it, and the first thing that Google did was give me a hotline number and told me to seek help. So good job, Google. Good job, Google.
I find that so annoying.
I mean, yes and no. Like, I actually think that, like, you know, people will literally, I Googled yesterday, why do my knees crack? Like, people will Google anything when they're going through something. So I don't think that's fair. I was doing it for research purposes, I think that it's pretty, like, I don't like when Facebook does that shit. When I post something on Facebook and they're like, are you okay? Bitch, leave me alone. But like directly putting something in the search engine, like red flags of abuse in a relationship, I think I do like that they put that there.
That's valid.
But so this website says red flags include someone who early in the relationships flatters you constantly and seems too good to be true. Checkbox. Once you all to him or herself insist that you stop spending time with your friends or family. Checkbox.
Let's make a rule. You see Paige and Hazel at school only.
Right? Does not honor your boundaries. Checkbox. Is excessively jealous and accuses you of being unfaithful. But his way of doing it was like, you're beautiful and you're smart and you're irresistible. Can you blame me for thinking every guy wants you like I do? Like that? I like that they put that in there because that sounds like, even though I don't know if it's ham-fisted or just maybe a little bit erring on the side of like, I don't know if a teenage boy would ever formulate that, but I think that that's a very smart way to kind of turn it on its head of like the jealous boyfriend of being within Rick's character of being like gentlemanly and like for having some predilection with these terms that he really should not be saying.
He says, like, I love you, presumably for the first time, the morning after he's put his hands on her for the first time.
Right. That's,
it's, yeah.
Yeah, it's, has, like, takes no responsibility for his or her behavior and blames others. Yeah, rages out of control with you but can maintain composure around others. Just a lot of things that are textbook they put in this episode, which they are want to do. That's kind of their thing. But I really think that it was a little heavy, like heavily laden this episode. And maybe that made me a little bit like,
I think though one of the purposes of Degrassi is to be like, you know, here are warning signs of something. Mm. Not even just intense, but informative. Here yeah. are warning signs of something you or your friend might be going through.
Yeah, and the format of it, and too. So
you have to lay it on thick and make it like, no, I think
yeah, that and it's, hammer I think it home quickly.
Well handled. It serves the purpose that Degrassi serves. It doesn't make for the best television, but that's what they've chosen to do, is tell these stories in 22 minutes, and that's fine. It is what it is, and it's still.
Yeah, it's just, I think that's right. It's like the point of it is like, okay, we're not making, we could make a whole show about this topic, but the point is we're not. It's about multiple different topics. It's about growing up. And I definitely don't mind that. I think that it like to play devil's advocate against my original sort of thought. Teenagers have notoriously always had like short attention spans. Like, I know it's gotten worse since I was a teenager. I would be irritated when there was like a long form video or something to watch online after a certain point because I just didn't want to sit for that. Now we barely want to sit for TikToks. And if it's not a good or real, if it's like 10 seconds in, if it's not catching you, you're rolling on. So attention span is really small, but it's always been that way, I think, for teenagers. So to you kind of have to catch their interest and get in there and do it quickly. And I think that that is another thing that boosts up like the formatting. Like, they know, okay, we only have 22 minutes. And though they do change the format later and down the road, I don't think their method or pace of storytelling ever really changes. Mm-hmm. We always get these sort of heavily laden topic episodes, and even for its shortcomings, I do think that they did a great job. I think that they kind of spun it in a way that is not always depicted. Like, I just think Rick's personality is a different one than we see. I don't know why. He's just like, maybe it's because of the way that his vernacular, it's probably because of his vernacular, but either way, it just makes it for a good combination of like, we had an off feeling about this guy. Now our suspicions are confirmed. At least it's not completely out of left field, because I always thought, like, not that his actor looks any sort of way, but just like, maybe the way he left the roses kind of put me off and had me feeling away. I'm not sure what it was, but I never really thought that, I never really got good vibes from Rick. I didn't think that what would happen would happen. I just thought that he was like
Well, like a and creep. Also, we see the roses, and then a couple episodes later, we see Rick again for the second time ever. And, like, and you right. know, mm-hmm. we don't have a lot of time to form any kind of opinion on him, but no, he's gross. He's like.
Yeah. It's like the story kind of wants us to, or they want us to kind of forget that we should be. They haven't given us an opportunity to know much about him. So we have to really know what the other character, like we have to go off of what the other characters are feeling and reacting and everything. And our personal opinion of the little we've been shown. Very little.
Yeah.
But let me see if there's anything else I really, I just want to point out that this is like the third major storyline that major quote-unquote storyline that Terry has ever had, and it's this bullshit. I'm so sorry, Terry.
It's a bummer. She deserved better. Hazel deserves way better. Yeah, because Hazel's like a solid
right. I said Hazel's character. On the case. I forgot how much she does. I mean, she is kind of like that plug-in, but I think in this instance it makes sense for her to be so, like, in the past she has been observant. It, mm-hmm. Like, that's a character trait that I think is, like, carries through.
She is a plug-in, and, like, they kind of make Hazel be whatever they need right. her to be that week. Mm-hmm. And she is consistently, like, an observant and caring and, like,
yes.
understanding friend. You know what I mean? Like, she's the friend that you want to be aware of your problems.
Exactly.
She's not gonna be like, you know, she's a little harsh with Terry, but like she's also really not. She's like, okay, what's going on? Like, and when Terry breaks up with him and like the hallway scene in the end and whatever, and she's not like, you know, when Terry says like, I know it's stupid, but I still care for him.
Yeah.
And Hazel's like, okay, but you know you have to stop.
Right.
She's not like, how could you possibly? It's like, she gets it.
Right. She gets it. And I.
And she's going to remind you that you can't do that anymore.
Yeah. I love Hazel in this episode. She's very. She approaches the situation with a lot of sensitivity. Like, she even waits until she's alone with Terry to kind of like, you know, can I do your nails? And then sees that she's got bloody lip, and you know, asks her about that, and it's not in any sort of like judgmental way, and she's just like, you guys don't fight, like I've never, like that's not really healthy, people don't mm-hmm. do, like that's not how relationships work. It just seems like the way she approaches it is very much like, I don't want to scare her away, because she can, I think she already understands what's probably happening, or at least like mm-hmm. some of what's happening. So to like have her be like, okay, I just want to approach this in a way that like when you're approaching an animal, you don't want to scare them off. Not to just comparing the situation of like someone who feels like they're being cornered is going to try to mm-hmm. run away. And I just really love how she is just there for her. And ultimately, Hazel's, I mean, in this situation,
emotionally mature.
Yeah. She, you know, in this situation that she realizes that there's only so much that she can do. Mm-hmm. She's got to be there for Terry and tell her that she doesn't deserve this and that she needs to, you know, not care about Rick in the way that she's caring about him now, because that's going to mean that she will get back with him and let the cycle continue. But she I think that she can see that, like, that's why she doesn't really interfere or anything, because, or go after her, because she can't really, what can you do? I think right. that's a very realistic depiction of, like, not even being a teenager in this situation, but being anyone in this situation, because it doesn't change when you get older. It's always, it's so difficult to talk about domestic violence, and it's something that people still don't talk about, because it's such a thing that people struggle with in private, and mm-hmm. people still get blamed and judged about it when it's an extremely complex thing that I can't even imagine being in a romantic relationship myself.
And also, like, ignored about it. Because
ignored, yeah.
One of the things, too, is that, like, a lot of abusive behavior has been normalized for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, not that, I don't know, like, it wasn't that big of a deal from a societal, like, point of view to have your boyfriend, you knowing your location all right. the time. Remember when T-Mobile advertised the fact, like, early in cell phones, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
T-Mobile had, like, the original Find My Friends, basically. Yeah. And they had those Where You At ads.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, like...
Yeah, I forgot.
Like, it was a selling factor that you could know where your fucking partner was at any time.
Yeah, it's now, right now, our phones stalk us for free. People don't even have to work that hard. Like, to not even to be, like, super funny about it, but, like, stalking in the 90s and the 80s, pre-cellular, internet, was an actual job. Like, you actually had to have some level of knowledge of the person and, like, mm-hmm. do some work. Now
it was Joe Goldberg style, but, like, it was analog,
right? Like, you're working with the knowledge of this person, you're working with their schedule, you know where they live, maybe, so you follow them. Like, my mom, and I mean, this isn't funny, but my mom said my biological father, before they broke up, he didn't take it very well. She would just be out with her friends and he would pop up there. And I'm like, in my mind, I would always react like, oh my gosh, because that is fucking terrifying. But in my mind, I'm like, that's low-key scary impressive. Like, how the fuck did you do that?
Right.
Like, that's a level of, like, and now you don't have to do any of that. Now the people can tag themselves and say, oh, I frequent this place, or I was here, or I'm there, or I checked in here. And it's just really very, very easy to track someone's movements, or you could literally put an air tag on their car, or, like, do all this crazy shit. And it's so easy to control someone based on knowing where they are. Yeah. Man, shit is scary. I'm so happy that I don't have any of these experiences with even being stalked, but it's so common to be stalked. It's extremely common to be in a violent,
so
romantic relationship.
Now
it's very easy to do. I actually find myself a little bit like, I need to pull myself back, because I'll look and I see where my mom is, because she goes back and forth between her house and her boyfriend's house. So I'm like, oh, okay, she's at her, like, I'll go and look at her location, and I'm like, is that creepy?
Oh no, it's your mom. I think if it's
only
mom.
Share with my mom. My partner and I, we decided long ago we didn't want to do that. Like, we're not going to share
right, if
our
it's
location.
An emergency, she can call your mom.
If it's an emergency,
if she's like,
she can
I
call
don't
my
know
mom.
Where the fuck Avis is? Can you please just, like, you don't even have to tell me where she is. As like, can you just tell me it's not a ditch somewhere?
Right. Yes.
You know,
that's what she says she will do, because she has my aunt's number as well. So it's my mom has it and my aunt in Reno has it. So, like, they're the only two people that have my location, and she's like, I don't want your location. And I mean, not to say that's everybody's or even that's how everyone's relationship should be. It's just I think that being in a situation where my movements and my everything, like, was just second guessed and questioned, that alone is so detrimental to mental health. And that alone is abusive, mm-hmm. without anything else involved. And
right. You don't have to have all of the components, like, and a behavior can be abusive.
Right.
And enough abusive behaviors. I mean, and also, I think it's like one abusive behavior is abuse.
Right. Yes.
You know, but I do also think, like, I don't think that one or even a few abusive behaviors necessarily means that a person is abusive. I think it means that shit's been normalized for a really long time. And if you're able to say to your partner, like, hey, I know you want location sharing because of XYZ. I'm not comfortable with it because of XYZ. Like, here's a compromise. And they're able to be like, oh, yeah, no, I get that. And yeah, I just want to know where you are in an emergency. being able to reach out to your mom is good. That's fine for me. Like,
yeah,
you right. know,
boundaries.
Abusive behaviors, I don't think necessarily make someone an abuser. It's how you act when you become aware of the fact that it's an abusive behavior.
Totally. And I think that's kind of what's shown here, too, is like Terry repeatedly is very expressive of how she feels in reaction to things that she's not comfortable with. And she's like, you are smothering me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and of course, no one wants to hear that. But like being able to, like the fact that she didn't keep it to herself and she's like, you're smothering me, like I need space. And that's not honored, that's met with, even if someone wasn't violent towards you. And when you expressed a like, oh, I feel smothered, and you're like, and you cry, or you just get like, you get hysterically like upset, that is a form of emotional manipulation. And it can, and I think that when that is reinforced every time you try to establish a boundary, I'm going to cry about it and make you feel bad until you back off. That is also abusive.
Right.
And it doesn't make the person abusive, but the behavior is abusive. And not being able to like establish, not being able to establish a boundary with a partner is not okay. If a partner tells you, I need this, and you say, fuck you, you don't care about them.
Right. And I think, you know, when boundaries aren't a thing that you grew up with, mm-hmm. and a partner establishes a boundary and it takes some trial and error for you to get there, that's a different thing.
Right. That's different.
It's about
the intention. And
an intention is an impact.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, some people are calculated and manipulative and abusive intentionally, mm-hmm. and some mm-hmm. people are not.
Right.
And it's about when you become made aware of the problems with behavior, where mm-hmm. do you go from there? And I right. don't even think, like, at first pass that being hurt by it is necessarily manipulative. Like, it's a logical reaction to, like, if I'm not trying to hurt you, mm-hmm. and you tell me that what I'm doing is hurting you,
mm-hmm.
it's upsetting to me that I'm hurting you. And I don't want that to be true.
Right. See,
and I'm speaking in like a royal eye, not a me.
No, and I agree with that. I more think, so my sentiment is on that, like, is that, and I think maybe, I think Louis C.K. said this, or someone of this comedian vein that I never expected to say something so profound, said, when someone says that you hurt them, you don't get to decide that you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's my only issue. It's like, if I say that you hurt me, or if I say that this is not what I want, and you say, no, that's not true, that's your problem. Like, that's mm-hmm. not something you get to do. And that's kind of where the injury comes in. Like, you can react emotionally towards it, but to say that they don't get to reinforce that boundary because it is something that upsets you is not okay.
Right, right. No, you have to be able to move past that hurt and upset.
Right. You can have a reaction, and I am probably the first person that's going to cry or feel upset if a boundary is enforced or if something comes up that upsets me. However, I'm not going to be like, no, fuck you, fuck this. I'm not going to, especially if it's something that makes sense, is reasonable for my partner, and is something that, like, is harmful if I don't do it.
Right.
Like, you never want to be the partner that, like, I feel like growth in a relationship is just, it's like an ever constant cycle, or at least it kind of should be. I feel like relationships change whether or not we put work in them to make them change. I think that it's just hard to force someone down a road of like, okay, you need to get this concept now. Like, people take a while for things to click and for them to apply it to their behavior. And I'm not faulting that. I have that same thing where sometimes me understanding something and applying something are two different things. But
right.
actively making effort and like being aware and taking steps to implementing that is a completely different road to take than being like, okay, my partner established this boundary and I'm going to cry about it every time.
Right. And it is great when we can grow with people and give people the patience to help them grow.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not in the place for that, that's fine too. You have no obligation to be the person to teach anyone anything.
Right.
And if you can't deal with your partner or your friend or your parent or your sibling, like stumbling through that, that's fine. And that's not a deficit on your part. And it's not anything you need to feel bad about. Right. Like maybe don't be a dick about it, but like, it's fine if that's not something that you can handle or want to handle.
Right.
Not even can, because we can all handle kind of anything if we really want to, I feel like. At least, like, with people's bullshit.
Yeah.
Most of us have worked retail.
Yeah, which you'd be surprised at what you can get used to. Yeah, no, it's just, relationships are hard. And I think that a lot of people just have insecure emotional attachments. And there are a lot of reasons why someone might become abusive. But, I mean, in Rick's case, we get some of the indication to his character. We understand him kind of by a certain point.
We don't really get to know Rick. I think his
not
parents...
like into not in any like internal sort of way, but like we get more of his psyche, I guess, as told by other people, really.
Yeah,
because he doesn't ever really verbalize anything. But like, it's clear that this kid never felt like he fit in anywhere. He's not secure in anything, especially not himself. So how can he be secure in another person?
Right.
And like, obviously he needs anger management, and he, spoiler alert, that happened. But like, I think he needs like much more than that. Mm-hmm. I just think that there's a lot of, for me, I might get so, I just can't conceptualize someone who gets so angry that they want to put their hands on someone. I've never really been that person. Like, I'll get angry enough to where I want to put my hands on you, but there's something to where I've never been like a little scrappy little person, but I'd like to think if you infringe upon me, I'm gonna beat your ass. But like, other than that, like, you gotta really, really rile me to anger to where I'm gonna feel like putting my hands on you. And the fact that that little, like, I mean, I don't know, put my head inside of a like a pubescent teenage boy is,
right.
But like, still, your fuse is not, like, the fuse does not exist. Like, you just go off without warning.
Right. I would say like the only time that that's ever happened to me was like, I don't even want to get into what had happened, but something had happened and I was like so angry about it that like I couldn't get it out of my body. I was feeling it on a like physical level and I couldn't get it out of my body. And I was like, I'm so angry. Like, I want to hit something, but like, I don't want to hit something like that. I'm not that. I don't hit.
Yeah.
I can't fucking hit. And my husband is an ex-con. And Forrest was like, go ahead and punch me in the chest a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did. And then he was like, okay, let me give you some instruction on how to do that a bit better. Go ahead and punch me in the chest a couple more times. Was that satisfying? Are you good?
Did you have your thumb tucked? Did you make your fist with your thumb? Okay, because like, that's the worst thing you could do. That's probably the worst.
I know not to tuck your thumb. For a minute, because I'm like, I know it's one thing, and then I'm like, I make a fist both ways, and I'm like, which one is the logical don't do? And I'm like, the thumb tuck. That's dumb.
Yes.
But like, I wasn't even like mad at him. I was just like really fucking mad, and I had been trying grounding shit and whatever, and I could not like. But no, I've certainly like had that feeling. I've definitely clenched my fists in an argument before.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's not even a like I'm clenching up to hit you. It's a like I'm holding shit in. You know
the amount. Like I get angry. I get angry enough, but like, I feel like I get more irritated than angry. I'm someone who's I'm someone who's easily irritated, but I'm and easily agitated, but I'm not easily angered. Mm-hmm. There's a you kind of have to work pretty hard, and that's why I think a lot of people I have heard discourse that I'm an angry person at times, but I'm like, I am never really angry. I'm just irritated. Anger is a whole different thing,
right?
But and I'm not annoyed, to say it so cryptically. I was gonna say right, but like my annoyance is gonna be very, very plain. But like anger is something different for me, and I think when you push me to anger, you're gonna know.
Right. Right.
But it's
no, I had that, like, I had an interaction after my 35th birthday. I don't know if I've told you about it. I don't really want to get into it. Mm-hmm. But I basically, like, I stopped being friends with somebody I'd been friends with for 15 years.
Yes.
Because, essentially, because I realized, like, I had spent the last 15 years growing and they had not. And I was not into the drama and the petty and the whatever anymore. And it was like we were on vacation and it was several days. And then the like post-vacation conversations of them trying to paint me as this giant asshole. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'll take the blame for the ways that I was an asshole in this story.
Yeah.
But I don't act like this with anybody but you. And I haven't for years. And this is a regular occurrence for you. So like, I'm good.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't drop it and just like kept throwing shit at me until finally I was like, all right, you want me to be the bitch? You want me to be the bitch in this story? That's fine. You have asked for this. And while I'm not a bitch anymore, I can be and I'm good at it and I'll pull it out when I need to.
Yeah.
And yeah, I said some real nasty things and I won that argument.
As you should. Done. Right.
Like, if that's what you want me to be, eventually I'm going to be it.
Yeah.
But that's not how I'm trying to live my life right now.
Unlike Rick, who's trying to live his life like a fucking menace.
Like a fucking menace to society and Terry in particular and Jimmy in particular.
Right. I do want to bring up one more thing.
Yes.
So... I feel like one of my like not if I I don't think I had any like actual surprises of this episode because I have seen it many times, but every time I'm always surprised that he or it's like taken aback, like, oh, I didn't remember it this way, that he hits her in the auditorium or in where they're striking the set for the show. And it kind of and I think that they chose to do that because there are other encounters have happened like in the alleyway, I guess it's behind the dot, or in another nondescript alleyway, because seems that there are many near Degrassi. It's not ever in like a location where other people could walk in or like,
right,
you know, like this is literally her school, and the fact that they chose to have it happen there, I don't think was an, you know, obviously nothing's an accident. They chose to stage it where they chose to stage it. But I just think that the fact that they did that has to mean that, like them saying, like, even your school's not a safe place from something like this. Like, right. You think that there's going to be a safe place for you to kind of get a reprieve and where they wouldn't dare cross that line. Because previously he had done it in private.
Right.
He had done it where they had some expectation of privacy. But really, as we know, when fucking Craig was playing that song for Ashley, anybody can walk in to the gym or where or the auditorium. Because like, right. I think it's a gymnasium auditorium, all multi-purpose room, whatever the fuck, with the stage. It's an accessible area for multiple locations. Like, someone could walk in over here. Someone could walk in over there. And the like, he's just so, the boldness is like, it doesn't give me quite chills, but it definitely is an eerie sort of thing. Like, the fact that he is so bold enough to do this in where where anyone could discover that where he's
anyone
just
could walk in hard, at any
he's
time
just
and see
hurt
him.
His girlfriend. Yeah.
Yeah.
Assaulting his girlfriend.
It's upsetting. It's but I think that kind of covers the A plot and the B plot. We've got some more things to talk about.
So let's get to the music corner first, because this is one of my all-time favorite songs.
I know.
Okay. But as I'm running over the lyrics in my head, I don't think
so. It doesn't fit.
No, because this is not one of those songs like The Police, Every Breath You Take, that people romanticize and it's actually about a fucking creep like that song is.
Right.
Kids, if you have not listened to Every Breath You Take by The Police, it's so creepy. Listen to the lyrics, not the cool ass, not the cool ass melody and right and the beat. No, you need to actually listen, right? Every breath you take, every step you take, I'll be watching you.
It's a great song. It's an enjoyable song.
It is a great song.
If you want to walk out to it in your car, like, that's fine.
Just don't think about it too hard. Don't
dance to it at your wedding.
Right? And don't dance to it at your wedding. Please don't.
But, like, no, Never Gonna Give You Up is Forrest and I walk down the aisle. It's a, such like, a wholesome song. As Mr. and Mrs. Fun Row.
Aww.
With an orchestral version of that playing. I think that is that it is a beautiful love song.
It is. It is. And it's like, we're no strangers to love. You know the rules and so do I. A full commitment's what I'm thinking of. You wouldn't find this with any other guy. I don't know.
Love that line, but like it's, whatever. It's,
well, that part is a little bit like macho, but I just want to tell you how I'm feeling. Like, I don't, it's a very wholesome song. If I have to think one word, it's wholesome. And is Rick there Astley douchey is 80 elements?
Adorable.
Sure. It was the 80s. Some elements that are douchey, but I think overall it ages very well.
I'm never going to give you up. I'm never going to let you down. I'm never going to run around and desert you. I'm never going to make you cry, and I'm never going to say goodbye.
Say goodbye.
I'm never going to tell a lie and hurt you.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It is. That's all anybody really wants out of a relationship. Wait, no. Have you seen that meme that is like, gives you up? Every time I see it, it's hilarious.
The meme about the Astley paradox where he asks his wife what she wants for her birthday and she says a DVD of Up and he can't ever give her up. But in not giving her up, he's letting her down.
Oh my gosh. I can't.
But no, it's a beautiful love song. And I mean, the title fits.
The title fits. The menacing, because in this context, the title is very menacing.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess if you had only ever heard the title of this song, maybe you would feel that way about the song too. But it is not that song at all. It is such a great song, a positive song.
Well, and I think it's clear. They choose.
Yeah, the title. Primarily
they go by the title, not by the song,
except when it's all a happy accident and it lines up, they're like, cool, whatever. But yeah, this is such a great song, and I feel like this is the most well-known song we've had so far in the music corner this season. I mean, I think Father Figure is pretty well known.
So obviously. Should or Stay or Should I Go?
Should I Stay or Should I Go is a pretty well known song. Yeah. I just, you know, I always think, obviously, Rick Roll was a thing.
Right. A beautiful thing.
A beautiful thing that I still get Rick Rolled on occasion, and it's always a delight.
I love a Rick Roll.
But yeah. Yeah. They chose but for the title not... on this one, y'all. The content is not there. The content is not there.
Do not associate this beautiful song with this ugly, awful relationship.
Right. This is not their song. But
I have a Heather Sinclair hypothesis.
Yay.
She is, I think, quite possibly, so when Terry is doing her really bad performance.
Mm-hmm.
Next to Jimmy.
Yes.
There's a blonde girl with bangs and like half ponytail, but the part that's up is in a bun.
Mm-hmm.
And really bad posture and a beige top. And she's laughing, and I think she might be Heather Sinclair.
Yeah, no, I saw that young lady and I was just like, I think we're doing a Heather Sinclair. If we're not, then that's my hypothesis. Oh no, I'm glad that we're on the same page. But yes.
from there, you want to take us to your favorite corner?
The fashion cone. Yeah, this episode, I'm not going to lie, because obviously this is a Terry-centric episode, and I really want to give Terry some hits. She doesn't have them. She doesn't have them. She's got one in this episode for me.
Which one is it?
It is the top, that flowery top, the blue... Mm-hmm. Flowery top when she night. Yes, I think that is a cute, and it looks like a new piece of wardrobe. I feel like they've mm-hmm. especially those shoes, they have worn literally the soles off of those fucking dad loafers,
right? Everything she, it is the only pair of shoes she owns. Mm-hmm. And then we've also they're heavy on the athleisure.
Yeah, right. They got her in a hoodie.
Not, because I took, and not in a good way, but I took a picture of her at one of the rehearsals.
Mm-hmm.
And she's wearing it looks like it's probably corduroy skirt that's like knee length, but then it's got this weird slit like in the middle.
Mm.
And then a white tank top and a pink button down. That like, or maybe it's not even a tank top because now I'm seeing white sleeves at the bottom. A white undershirt of some sort and a pink button down that's open. And like, she looks like Linda from HR and it's after work drinks, so she's unbuttoned her blouse.
And it's so bad. I feel so bad. Like, it's just not, it's not a good look for her, primarily because most of the looks aren't good looks for her. So, like, I kind of feel like they give her such bottom of the barrel outfits. Outfits at all. I don't know if anybody actually, like, Paige's outfits in this episode are strong. And she's literally barely in the shit. So the fact that every time I see her, I'm like, oh, Paige, when she's walking up to, or when she's at the locker with JT, I did not take screenshots. So you're just going to have to take my word.
I have one.
Okay.
Where she's wearing, it's like a light blue top with, like, it looks like a tank top with another tank top over it.
Yes. Yes. I like that outfit. And it's eye-catching. I think it's a cute, like, I mean, and then the other two times you see her are similarly themed, where she's, the one outfit was really cute. It was like a tank top that was colorful. With like
in the scene where Spinner gets pants, I got a bad
yes, Paige's outfit during pantsing. Yes,
don't love the boots, but the outfit otherwise is cute.
Yeah.
I also think JT. I'm liking JT's wardrobe.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of like
that one shirt
is like a Hawaiian anymore.
Yes, that blue
but it's
one.
Still like it's like he's evolved his style.
Yeah, that blue one I really like.
It's working for him.
Yes. He's on the in list for that, for the outfit when he's when Radich comes up to him and reads the poem to him.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very good, not even just color for him, but like I think the pattern looks really nice on him. And I did mention I like Terry in the bathroom, her outfit, but also Paige and Hazel in the bathroom are really cute. I really like Hazel's top. I like when they dress her in those like peachy pinks, like those soft colors. I think it works well with her complexion. And then Paige's, I actually prefer her outfit with the jean jacket that she has on later. I think that makes the outfit. I don't know why. Like, the jean jackets in the aughts was, like, such an... I still love a jean jacket. I still rock. I have several jean jackets. Well, you know. But but a jean jacket is such a classic staple that I truly don't think is ever going to go out of style.
No.
But it really makes an outfit. Like, it just sets it off. And it was, like, a dark jean jacket, too, with a lighter blue shirt. Mm-hmm. And I think it works really well with the tan pants too that she has on. So,
yeah, no, it's a good. It definitely works, and it pulls the outfit together very well.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any other fashions?
Yes, I have Manny's outfit during JT's fart prank. It's very brief, but it reminds me. So I was in this student film when my aunt was going to college, and it was called Dream Song. And I was playing Ashanti, but because I couldn't be named Ashanti, he named me Ashante in the script. So I, off the shoulder, like that one naked shoulder, and then the other shoulder having like the long sleeve was very much in. And I had a little mini like songstress outfit that was that sort of vibe of Manny's outfit with the one shoulder across, cut off and everything, and the other shoulder bare. And I like the color. It's like a, isn't it like a orangey?
It's like an orangey pinky thing going on.
Yeah, and there's flowers.
But it's a good color on her, yeah.
But she's immediately grossed out, so you know, we don't see very much of it, but we do get like a like no feet, but the what we can see of it, it's a very cute outfit.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
We do have a hun. It's very, very quick. It's when Spinner comes over and she says hi hun. But it's a hun and it counts.
It does count.
And with that,
we're gonna go fire some shots.
Pew 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 pew, 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 pew.
Shots fired.
I have 11 shots fired today. How many do you have?
I only have 6.
Okay, I think obviously there's some overlap. So I mean, I'll just read the first one I have. It's discourse between Rick and Jimmy in the first scene of the episode. Rick says, my mother walked the boards at Stratford for 10 years. Jimmy says, well, maybe you can stage manage.
See, and mine is before that, when Rick says, well, no offense, Jim, theater's in my blood. And it's specifically the calling him Jim.
Jim, yeah, yep. Like, that is not the preferred addressing of this man. Yeah, no. later, Rick and Jimmy are like the highlights in these couple shots fired I have. Jimmy's saying, well, because he pulls Rick aside and he asks, and Rick is like, can I have examples of these tips that you don't want me to give Terry anymore? And he says, well, the breathing. Terry sounds like she's smoking.
Yep, that was one of mine. before
it's the line delivery for me.
Yeah. Before that, in that first exchange, when he says, who knows, maybe I'll even teach Jim a few tricks of the trade.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's the gym. It's the gym.
Yeah, it's the gym.
Gotta hate Rick, m'lady.
Oh my gosh.
Visceral.
Just stop sucking so bad. My next one is Rick saying, I'll go right after the Terry sounds like she's smoking. Rick says, I'll go talk to her. You know, starts to say, I'll go talk to her. And Jimmy says, you know what? We're going on this afternoon, so I will, because I'm the director.
Nice. I've got the rest of mine are Spinner and JT.
I have, I mean, it's a little cheap, but I have Terry saying, you're jealous. Nobody loves you and he loves me and you want to take that away.
Mm-hmm.
Only pretty much put that on there because it's like a non-Manny, you're jealous.
Yeah. When JT and Spinner are first interacting at the locker and Spinner comes over and goes, bye, JT, run along now and join the other children.
Yes, yes.
And then also when JT pisses him off with the copycatting and is like, geez, might want to cut back on the red meat there, Tiger.
I have JT saying, oopsie daisy, spoon fell. Be a good boy and get me a clean one.
Mm-hmm.
And then my next three are rapid. I'm going to just rapid fire them because they're all at JT. Okay. JT for ordering corn relish. The way JT says plague.
Plague?
Plague.
Nobody pronounces it like that.
Fuck him for saying plague. I really don't know what that was. And also, I guess more JT towards Spinner, but JT towards Spinner for not finishing their handshake.
He said, oh, fuck Terry's your stepping on Rick's fucking rose.
Yes. And my last one, yeah, I actually like go off Terry. Fuck that rose. Fuck you, Rick. My last one is Quan saying, Gavin, if only you could apply this passion to your poems in class.
Yeah.
Like, shut the fuck up, Quan. Like, she always gotta come in calling him Gavin, even though that's his name, and being just generally shitty. Yeah, but
you know he doesn't go by it. Like, it's shitty.
Yeah. But, I mean, speaking of shitty, do we want to talk about our super bummers first?
Yes. Like, everybody.
Everybody. Everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so obviously Rick super bums me out.
Yeah.
JT and Spinner.
Yeah, their whole plot line is just them being douches to each other. And I mean, at points though, I think that Jimmy is on the offense, rightfully so. So he, for Jimmy me, is not.
A shining star.
He is a shining star. I was gonna say, I think this might be that we might get to the end of this pad and find that not only is Jimmy like not the bitch ass character we thought he was, but like Ellie is worse than we thought she was.
Worse than you thought she was.
I always knew. I'm so scared that that's how it's gonna turn out. But no, yeah, Jimmy's great in this. And I mean, Marco's there, but he didn't bum me out. He was just there.
Yeah, no, Marco's just there.
Wallpaper.
Marco's just there. Hazel.
Quan bummed me out though.
Star.
Yes, Hazel and Jimmy.
And Jimmy.
What a power couple. What an empathetic fucking, right. Like, talk about having greatness separately and then coming together. And then, well, coming together is not really the great part. But having greatness separately, like, they are empathetic friends. They are observant. They are 10 toes down for you. I love it. And so I guess, I mean, we've already spoken. Hazel and Jimmy are shining stars, and I don't really think anybody else comes into that realm
not of really.
Being
no,
considered
too.
A shining star next to them. So, yeah. I mean, does it go there?
Does it go there?
Yeah, it goes there. It's got abuse.
Like, yeah, this fucking episode is like low-key traumatic, but yeah, it definitely goes there. It 100% goes there.
And it does it within the confines that Degrassi has set for itself to tell a story. It tells the story, and it tells the story well.
Mm-hmm.
And the story is one worth telling, and I would not be surprised if this episode, you know, helped teenagers either realize that they were in an abusive relationship or that their friend might be.
Right. You know? Yeah. Gives warning signs. And I think that, you know, that format helps. Gives you all the warning signs leading up to actual assault. And I think it's definitely a great, and it went there, definitely a great portrayal of the issue. If not a wee bit short, but you know.
They have 22 minutes, Avis. What do you want from them?
Nothing more, nothing less. They're just 22 minutes of worth of Degrassi every week. But yeah, they gave that to us, and
It went there,
yeah.
I guess that's it, if you want to bring us on out.
Yes, sir. Thanks for listening to your mom's podcast. Next week, Craig meets the consequences of his own actions in Holiday Parts 1 and 2.
Beautiful.
This episode of Your Mom's Podcast is made possible in part by The Dot, The Three-Quarter Rule, and support from listeners like you.
If you'd like to further support our show, you can find us on TikTok and Facebook as Your Mom's Podcast. We also have a Facebook group of the same name. And you can find us on Instagram at YMPodcast. Your Mom's Podcast is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscriptions and reviews are another great free way to support us. However, if you're interested in supporting us in not free ways, we have a lot of great bonus content on our Patreon and some great merch at our shop, which can be found at your-moms-podcast-shop.forthwall.com. And remember, that's Padcast. PAHDCAST. Thank you.
And now we would like to take a moment to thank our Patreon subscribers. Octavia Faith,
June Bard,
Margot Mancini,
and Brianna Bradshire.
And a special thanks to our Titty Snake producer, Alika Fenderson.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Ew, I hate how I said thank you. Thank you.